This is Current State on WKAR, your weekly program of all things Capital Region. A look back on the week's news and a look ahead to the events here in the Lansing area and across Michigan. Hi, I'm Scott Pohl. The city of Flint is asking its residents to support a plan to keep its current primary water source. On Tuesday, Mayor Karen Weaver recommended the city retain the Great Lakes Water Authority. The agency sends water to Flint through the Detroit Regional Water System. The recommendation comes 3 years after the start of Flint's public health emergency. Lead leached into the public water supply because water that was then drawn from the Flint River was never treated with anti-corrosion chemicals. The plan to keep the status quo in Flint is hard for some residents to swallow. The announcement on Tuesday was followed by a contentious town hall meeting on Thursday. WKAR's Kevin Lavery reports.
3 years after Flint's disastrous decision to switch its main water supply to the Flint River, and 18 months after returning to the Detroit tap, Mayor Karen Weaver told attendees at City Hall last Tuesday that staying with the Great Lakes Water Authority is the city's safest and lowest cost option.
So this protects residents from any potential fears or anxieties that would come with another change in our water source. Ensuring the public's health and safety is our number one top priority.
Under the plan, Genesee County would provide a secondary water source for Flint. The city would also regain control over a 72-inch water transmission line. Richard Baird is an advisor to Governor Rick Snyder. He said Flint is on its way toward developing a high-tech monitoring system.
These kinds of things, coupled with new pumps and new technology and equipment, truly will position Flint to be the bellwether when it comes to infrastructure and water delivery. It is a very big deal.
The deal with Great Lakes Water Authority would also eliminate the city's $7 million annual bond obligation to the Carignandi Water Authority. That's the agency that's building a pipeline to Lake Huron, an option Flint previously considered before Weaver's new recommendation. The announcement did not sit well with some Flint residents.
This looks like a whole big setup to me.
Tony Palladino lives on Flint's east side.
This right here is going to be a county takeover. We need our own pipelines in Flint. We need our own water plant in Flint. There's no reason why we can't take care of ourselves.
On Thursday, Flint officials tried to sell the plan to residents at a town hall meeting at House of Prayer Missionary Baptist Church. The debate was at times raucous. One woman complained that not enough was being done to purify the water.
How are we going to protect people when they're in their showers and when they're washing their clothes? I'm not trying to be rude. I am not trying to be rude, but this is serious. And people are going to continue to get sick and possibly die.
By the end of the meeting, 6 people had been arrested. It's clear Flint is still navigating troubled waters. Officials hope avoiding a switch to yet another water source will help to rebuild eroded trust in the community. Residents have until May 20th to comment on the proposal. For WKAR, I'm Kevin Lavery.
Current State from WKAR. Earlier this week, the Wharton Center announced the details of their 2017-18 season. WKAR's Jamie Paisley spoke with some of the key folks at the Wharton Center about the cultural and artistic luminaries arriving in mid-Michigan next season. First, though, let's learn about those ever-popular Broadway productions.
There is plenty to love in the just-announced Wharton Center 2017-18 season of Broadway favorites. Well, mostly Broadway, since the first production in mid-October is one that hasn't been in New York quite yet. Wharton Center's executive director, Mike Brandt.
And one of them hasn't even played the United States until this U.S. tour started, which is David Ian's British production of The Bodyguard, which is It's a script that follows the movie very closely. It is just chocked full of hit music, and it is a huge audience pleaser.
In addition to her famous cover of Dolly Parton's I Will Always Love You, the musical version of The Bodyguard also contains several hit numbers by the late Whitney Houston. But there are 2 other musicals coming to the Wharton Center's 2017-18 season which also highlight women songstresses. February's On Your Feet celebrates the music of Latina superstar Gloria Estefan. While January's production of Waitress features original music by pop singer-songwriter Sarah Bareilles. We'll say hello, how you been
looking around, seeing the same. It's kind of the new hybrid and the new infusion of rockers, American songwriters, that are now integrating into New York's Times Square Broadway Theater, creating an energy that's very American. So Broadway has become America's art form, both in education and in our presentations of these national tours.
In December, the family-friendly musical Finding Neverland, exploring the life of Peter Pan creator J.M. Barrie, arrives on stage, while March of 2018 heralds the smash Broadway hit Something Rotten, which lampoons Shakespeare and musical theater itself. But to close the 2017-18 season at the Wharton Center...
Well, we're bringing the King back, the One King musical, which is The Lion King. It, since its creation, it never lost its title. Can you feel the love tonight?
A blessed evening brings. This Lion King run even includes a sensory-friendly performance during that blockbuster production's 2.5 weeks at the Wharton Center in July of 2018. That long residency includes dates set aside specifically for subscription members, but subscription has yet another benefit, as Wharton Center's Diane Wilcox explains.
We are looking toward Hamilton in our 18-19 season, which is one of the largest hits in the world. People really crave access to that, and of course we want to allow our subscribers greatest opportunity for that. So if you do subscribe this year to the 17-18 season to 5 or more productions, and then you renew to 5 or more in our 18-19 season, you will have first access to tickets to Hamilton.
In addition to the always popular Broadway series at the Wharton Center, there are many other visiting artists and lecturers coming to the Wharton Center in the just-announced 2017-18 season. So many that I won't be able to cover the entire list of them. You can find that full list, however, online at WKAR.org and at WhartonCenter.org, where you can also find that subscription information. But when it comes to that non-Broadway series, since I am also the afternoon classical host on WKAR, we will continue on with that series, which includes a return engagement from the Moscow State Symphony Orchestra, playing Wagner's Rienzi Overture, the Sibelius Second Symphony, and joined by that up-and-coming cellist Narek Hakazarian with solos in Schumann's Cello Concerto. That concert will be in early November, but later that same month, just after Thanksgiving,
we have the Vienna Boys Choir.
Ryan Clute of the Wharton Center.
And they are coming November 28th in a holiday concert. So when people think of Vienna Boys Choir, they always think of, you know, obviously kids performing, but the magic and the music that they elicit is just stunning, and it's so beautiful to hear. So they are coming with all kinds of holiday classics that folks will love.
The classical season ends with a bang in February with Romantic-era trios by Schubert and Brahms played by three superstars, including the most famous cellist in the world.
Cellist Yo-Yo Ma, pianist Emmanuel X, and violinist Leonidas Kavakos.
Dance-wise, the Hubbard Street Dance Chicago troupe brings some of their most popular works to the Wharton Center in October, but yet another Russian ensemble plies a welcome in mid-Michigan.
Moscow Festival of Ballet, and they are coming with Cinderella, and that's in January. Great for the family. Sometimes when we'll present ballets, we'll see kids showing up in tutus, and they have a lot of fun.
During this unveiling of the Wharton Center's 2017-18 season, we learned that their Worldview Lecture Series is bringing three speakers to Mid-Michigan. David Ignatius, the novelist and journalist with The Washington Post, in October, while in December, Gina McCarthy, former head of the Environmental Protection Agency under President Obama's second term, will talk public policy. But in April of 2018, she became, just this past week, the first woman to win the Pulitzer Prize twice for drama. Lynn Nottage will discuss theater, as well as her award-winning plays Ruined and Sweat.
That's what they want. We offer to take 50% pay cut. They won't budge. They want us to work longer hours, give up our retirement. What's the point?
In November, one Hollywood veteran and Michigan native will be returning to East Lansing, according to Wharton Center Executive Director Mike Brand.
That's right. We actually stay in touch with Jeff Daniels. He sends me a letter once a year, either telling me that he can't come and do this big project we've been talking about because he's got another big film or TV series, but he wanted to do a Wharton Center appearance this year, and he's got his son's Ben Daniels band. And David Sedaris, we have a partnership with his management, and he comes here every time he gets a new book out, and so they kind of watch that, and he likes the audience here. He feels at home at the Wharton Center.
And NPR audiences love David.
And the NPR audience. So it's a good fit for us.
Both Jeff Daniels and David Sedaris will be taking over the Wharton Center in November later this year. Again, there is much, much more coming to East Lansing in that just-announced Wharton Center 2017-18 lineup. Visit WKAR.org for that full Wharton Center calendar. For WKAR, I'm Jamie Paisley.
Its current state on WKAR. Earth Day celebrations are going on all this weekend. WKAR's Brooke Allen and Greening of the Great Lakes host Kirk Heinze sit down to talk about the environmental awareness that has happened since 1970.
Earth Day began 47 years ago on April 22nd, 1970, and I'm speaking to Kirk Heinze, who is the host of the Greening of the Great Lakes on MSU Today and also on AM 870 and 94.5 every Sunday. Ooh. And Kirk, you know a lot about environmental issues right here in Michigan. It's kind of your specialty. Take me back to 1970.
Yeah, Brooke, I'm going to date myself, but I was graduating from Albion College in 1970, and that was the first Earth Day celebration. And it was actually celebrated by people not only in the United States, but all over the world, primarily as an offshoot of Silent Spring and Rachel Carson, the Cuyahoga River igniting on. All these things were happening that were detrimental, that showed that our environment was failing. Earth Day raised the consciousness of people all over the world about we need to do something about our earth, air, and water.
And you were very involved back then?
I was not as involved as I am now. I've got more involved as time went on. I was doing a lot of things that college seniors do back then.
Right.
But I was conscious of it because, I mean, the New York Times ran a front page cover on Earth Day. I mean, there was a lot of media attention. And it sort of just began to kindle the awareness among a lot of us.
Okay, so 1970, let's skip ahead to, say, 1985. Tell me where we were back in 1985.
Well, we had Clean Air, Clean Water Acts. We had legislation that was passed. Interestingly enough, primarily during the Nixon administration, things were improving gradually. But things like alternative energy and invasive species and some of the issues that we deal with, autonomous vehicles, locally produced food, I mean, those were just embryonic in 1985. But since 85 and over the last 20 to 30 years, I mean, many of these issues have become front and center. You can't pick up a newspaper, listen to a radio show, watch a TV show, news, without seeing some sustainability-related issue these days.
So there has been a general acceptance over the years of environmental issues. And as you say, people now, I mean, it's everywhere you look.
I recently had an Earth Day panel of some very distinguished environmentalists, and they said the real take home is that sustainability, environmentalism has become mainstream now. It's not on the fringe. It's not liberal. It's not conservative. It's really bipartisan, and it's the wave of the future.
So what do you think is the biggest threat facing us on the environmental level in Michigan?
Well, in Michigan and globally, it's climate change. But specifically in Michigan, the invasive species and the cleanup of our Great Lakes remains paramount because of the importance of the Great Lakes to the state of Michigan. Moving towards a greater and renewable energy portfolio is very important in Michigan. But we all have to be conscious of climate change. And the overwhelming preponderance of the science suggests that it is real. Those who want to deny it can deny it. I tend to go with the science.
So we're around, obviously, college kids here at Michigan State University. And what do you overhear them saying?
We have college students on Greening of the Great Lakes as much as we can because I love having the college students. As President Simon has said as well, when they come to Michigan State now as freshmen, they're not asking about recycling. They're not asking about solar. They expect it, and they expect to hear about it in their classes. They're looking for majors in sustainability. It's part of their ethos now. It's part of their DNA.
So what do you think the headline will be in, say, 2020 when it comes to Earth Day?
Well, in 2020, Earth Day will continue to be celebrated across the globe. Hopefully, we can talk about some reductions in greenhouse gas emissions, temperatures coming down, maybe the reefs starting to recover. Maybe there'll be some good news on the global front. And maybe the United States will catch up with some other countries on the sustainability front.
Thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure, Brooke.